Hello, dear friends in the wine industry. This is Milton Cornwell with another installment of the Copper Peak Logistics Expert Series. With all the changes that are going on in our world and all of us being asked to evaluate a new path forward with our personal and professional lives, the phrase, let's return to normal, is more or less the ultimate paradox because there really is no normal in our future. There's only change. And there will be innovation, adaption, and survival of the fittest, something that Mother Nature has known for a long, long time. For the wine industry, it begins and ends with customers and understanding what motivates them today and tomorrow, which is critical for engagement with your wine brands. To probe this topic and others, we're delighted to catch up with Elizabeth Schneider, the award-winning podcaster of Wine for Normal People, an experienced speaker on entrepreneurship and wine, and a wine educator. So Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your thoughts on consumer engagement. I think a great place to start would be to have you give us an overview of your podcast and recent book, Wine for Normal People, along with what led you to pursue these endeavors.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. The problems that I saw in the wine industry led me to do what I wanted, what I ultimately did, which have been traditionally that the consumer or the wine drinker, and I don't even like using the word consumer because it feels so like commercial, you know, everyone is a human. And so problem with the wine industry is that we always think about people as demographics and we think about them as consumers and we think about them as having dollar signs on their heads. When I got started in wine, I felt that. I mean, I actually felt that. So I came out of Wesleyan University, liberal arts grad. I was living in Boston. I was a professional. I walked into wine shops and I had no idea what I was doing, and certainly no one was willing to offer help. It wasn't like any other experience I'd ever had. And I felt like, hey, I'm a smart kid. I can make this happen. I can interact with really smart people. I was working in high tech in Cambridge, Massachusetts. You know, this was not small time. And I could talk and present in meetings. And yet when I would go into wine shops, I would just, as I say in the book, you know, leave my self-esteem in the bold-shouldered Cabernet aisle, and having not known whether it was a grape or a region at that time, I was never going to find that self-esteem again. Yeah. So then I fell in love with wine because I took a class. I finally found somebody who would actually teach me something. And at that point, I got kind of the wine bug and I thought, how can I get into this? It was very hard to figure out how to get in. And I got my MBA at UNC, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And there happened to be a large winery, which I will not mention, that was recruiting on campus for marketing, which was my focus. And I wound up in the industry. But then still, it was like, it was even worse when I got into the industry because what I realized was that big wine is not about the customer. I'm not sure it has to be at that scale. For people listening to this, it does have to be about people. In large wineries, it's all about the supply chain and about cogs and the machine, and they're doing something very different. But if you actually care, the end drinker is so important, and we very rarely think about that. So my mission became, after I left that winery, to try my best to be the best emissary for wine, not for a brand, but for wine, and try to teach people how to appreciate it, how to love it by doing what I know how to do, which is extensive research and really probing into an issue and getting multiple perspectives, forming opinions so that people would, they didn't have to agree with me, but they had to know that there was some way to look at this through a lens. And so that's what the book is about, and that's what the podcast is about.
Did you find that there was almost in the wine industry, you know, many years ago, that there was almost a closed door, if you will, that the knowledge was on the other side of the door of what really the wine world is all about? And the general consumer, you know, would come to the door, but rarely would it get cracked wide open and invited you in an embracing way. It was almost like you had to try to figure out, do I want to go in there, and then figure out, well, how do I get in? Is that a way to typify?
Oh my God, that's such a great way to typify. It almost feels like you might have had that experience.
That's the way I was 10 years ago.
Right? I mean, it's sort of like this black box. The other problem, though, is after doing so many events for, you know, I do a lot of corporate events and I deal with people on a regular basis, and people, it's like a confessional sometimes. People are like, look, I buy really expensive wine and I'm not exactly sure what such and such thing is, or I am afraid to ask because I have, and this is people who are so educated. I mean, people who listen to my show, generally speaking, are not, this is not Wine for Dummies. It's people who really want to learn and they are kind of nerdy. I have a lot of doctors. I have a lot of lawyers. I have a lot of finance professionals. I have a lot of consultants, people who are highly educated. It's not mainly industry. It's a lot of regular people. And they are, it's like, yes, it's exactly that. It's like, how do I even get into this? Somebody just wrote me yesterday who was like, look, I'm not your typical demographic. I'm a baby boomer, but I feel like now I'm just so getting into wine. And I said, I don't care about demographics. Are you willing to learn? Are you interested? You're welcome here then. And I don't think people say that ever. Do you?
No, not directly. And for those listeners that may not be as familiar with your podcast series, tell them exactly what it is that you have out there available for folks.
I have released over 300 episodes and been around for 9 years. Mm-hmm. And the podcast focuses on wine education. It focuses on really navigating people through regions and changes and grapes. And then there's practical stuff too. There's shopping and visiting wineries and things like that. But really it is geared towards the wine drinker. And the sole idea of it is to communicate really hard information into something that is fun and easy and lovable. I mean, my goal is to make people want to love wine by using analogies that they can understand and things that they can relate to, which again, the wine industry often does not do a great job of. Because we think that's all anybody ever thinks about. Like, because all we ever think about is wine, we think it's such a small part of people's lives, but it can be really joyful if we allow it to be.
So your focus has been on helping educate consumers on all the things that we want them to know about wine, but we're perhaps embarrassed to ask, right? And so can you tell us a little bit more about what you call humanizing the consumer and why it's so important?
Yeah. I mean, again, this sort of comes from my time working in corporations and also having so many friends who work in the wine industry. I'll give you a really great example. So I spoke at an international industry conference last year. I rarely get invited to industry things. Most people in the industry don't even know I exist, even though I tend to exert a lot of influence sometimes on what people buy. But the industry conference was, my mind was blown. I was listening to what people were saying about the consumer and the millennial consumer and the boomer consumer and the Generation X consumer. And all I kept thinking about is, when was the last time any of you spent a few hours with somebody sitting in a wine shop and watching how people have to navigate through this category and this industry? When was the last time you actually sat down with somebody and had them really be frank and honest with you about what they go through when they make wine decisions and how absolutely stressful that can be? There are these adages, people just keep holding on to these things. And unless you actually get out and decide, hey, guess what? We are going to look at these people as human beings and understand what their psyche is, how they look at wine and how we can help them beyond just trying to hawk them wine and move our vintage, things could really change.
Well, and I think it's important for all of our winery brands that they attempt to try to create more of a relationship with their customers and telling their story and not treating them as per se, just this is a sale, this is a person, and they have engagement opportunities with wineries, and really trying to figure out how do we make those happen is critically important, no?
Yeah, it is. And it's not just about like having a virtual tasting and calling it a day. Again, that's another way that I think in this environment right now, people are just like, how do I sell more wine? How do I sell more wine? These people are not ATM machines. They are humans, right? And so you have to offer them some extra value. You need to do things like, maybe you need to think about, if they don't know, what if they don't know exactly what a toast level on a barrel is and what it does, or what the difference between Hungarian oak is, things like that, which are, those are very complex concepts and most people do not have time to think about that. But you could do something like that. You could talk about what you're doing in the winery, in the winemaking process, that has nothing to do with selling bottles. And I think that that kind of engagement, that's what I mean. You know, when you're saying a personal level, I don't mean saying, hey, Sally, we really appreciated you and writing your name at the bottom of a card. I'm talking about getting into what would actually matter to people. And, you know, do you bring something different to the table than just your wine and tasting your wine? I mean, people can only do that for so long, but you don't have to constantly be engaged with people either. They're happy to see you, but I feel like in this environment, people have been so worried and they're like, I'm doing a tasting every week. I'm going to do, after a while, that's not going to work. So how do you strategically decide, like, hey, I want to be in your life, customer, and I want to be able to provide you value, and I'm going to pop in and give you something that's valuable every now and then. And I am here to make you happy and smarter and like wine more. And of course, with goodwill comes good business.
This area we're touching on, is this really what you've referred to in the past as going beyond the demographics of customers?
Yes. I mean, the number one thing I would say to wineries is, do not look at age as the bellwether. This is so much more than that. Again, I just told you the story about a boomer who came to me and said, I'm new to wine. And there are millennials who know a million things about wine. And there will be Generation Z who will also know a million things about wine. And my generation, Generation X. And don't assume that just because somebody is from a certain generation that they have a certain attitude. I mean, it's not a monolith. Generations are a human construct. We have to deal with people on their interest levels. What are people interested in? If somebody is, I'm going to take it out of wine for a second. Let's say somebody is just so interested in growing tomatoes. Like, they love that. That could be somebody who's 8 or 88, but their interest level, the thing that they are interested in, is that focus. And so what is it? Every winery has a different kind of profile of customer. It's not about the demographics. It's about who's going to be attracted to you and what are they like? What's the common thread that you see? I mean, I can tell you in my audience, I would hang out with every single person that listens to me practically, because I have managed to cultivate a group of people who have the same interests that I do. You know, when we do our underground wine events, the people that are at that event, I want to spend time with them because I know they all have something in common. And I can guarantee that wineries, especially smaller ones, have that too, but they don't often hone in on that. That's way beyond demographics.
Hopefully we have, you know, some of the small, medium-sized wineries that have the opportunity to listen to this. And if we were to get things kind of granular, because we're talking in bigger concepts, are there any things that you would suggest, you know, the 1, 2, 3 things that if you're not doing these things, you really should explore them as a means of trying to really understand their customers on a better level?
I mean, I think that you need to talk to your tasting room staff and you need to talk to retailers that sell your product and find out who your customer actually is, not what the numbers say, not what, you know, not what the dollar figures say. Find out who these people are. And if you can do that, then you can much better target a strategy about what would be of value to them. Not knowing who people are, or not knowing what your vibe is, or how you're actually connecting with people, is a bad choice. I think a lot of wineries totally disregard their tasting room staff. I mean, maybe they treat them well. I'm not saying that they don't treat them well, but are you asking these people? Because these are your front line. This is the people who are seeing people come in. They're seeing people who are satisfied. It's so important. And again, if you sell your wine in a retail environment or in restaurants, go make an effort to talk to servers about, you know, your better accounts. Ask them why people buy your wine. What is it about that? It makes a huge difference to understand. Once you figure out your vibe, then you can figure out what are the kinds of things that people would want. Ask them. people love being asked. Go take a survey. Say, we care about what you want to hear about, but don't make it about your wine. Make it about like another educational topic or a topic in wine. Another thing is that, and I know this is controversial for some people, is what about banding together with some of the other wineries in your region and making things a bit more interesting, having conversations or doing a multi-pack so that people can taste what Oakville tastes like, or people can taste what, you know, Sonoma Mountain tastes like. Being the only thing that you're concerned about is not serving your customer well.
And so how do we do some of these things now in this COVID world where, to a degree, we are somewhat isolated and travel and our tasting rooms have been disrupted and our restaurant industry has been disrupted. Obviously, the virtual tastings is the number one thing that we have seen as an outgrowth of the COVID lockdown. What are some other things, though, that we can be doing in addition to these online virtual tasting? Are there other things that you see that wineries have great opportunities to kind of advance and move into this much, much quicker than they normally would have?
I think everything I said could be done virtually. Everything except talking to your tasting room staff, who you should be doing that anyway, right? They have so much information. And some of the tasting rooms in Napa and Sonoma specifically have been open, but it doesn't matter. Those people have a lot of institutional knowledge, especially the ones that have worked in your tasting room for a long time. You can ask them. But again, if you sell in a retail environment, your good accounts are still good accounts. Retail is taking off. Maybe not a great time to contact the restaurant industry because it's really tough on them. But you can do all of this virtually. And then, like I said, cool it on the tastings of just your wines. Find another way to connect, because it seems after a while to not be thinking about the end person, right? I mean, maybe they do have fun doing it. And if they do, that's great. But offer them something different. In marketing, they always talk about surprise and delight. Mm-hmm. Surprise and delight means you are not doing the same thing everyone else is doing. And the other thing that I would say is I feel like wineries are panicking because they're worried that if they're not doing virtual stuff, take your time and do it well and do it focused. Do it less often, but do it really, really well. And why not? You know, maybe you do have a great retail partner. Partner up with them. Do whatever you need to do to expand your knowledge of the person, the wine drinker. Be empathetic. Think of these people as if they were friends or family, and figure out what your family vibe is, what your tribe vibe is, and cater to that. If we started to do that, by the way, you might shed some customers that way too, and that is okay. But you deepen the relationships and then you attract more people that you want to attract. It's okay to lose customers if they're not good customers. What's not okay is to ignore the idea that you've got so much going for you and you're not sort of probing into that. That's what I think. And again, it's all about humans are on the other side of that transaction.
So if I'm hearing you right, possibly what we could say is that it's not just a virtual tasting you need to be worrying about right now because everybody is doing it. You need to figure out other ways to be able to use the technologies to communicate the story about the vineyard. Where are the vineyards located? Anyone that wants to understand what barrel tastings are all about and why they're important, or a Brix count or something like that, use the opportunity for engagement. And then possibly a second thing is create certain feedback mechanisms, you know, wherever they may be, in-house employees, tasting room, restaurants, whatever it is, create feedback mechanisms that you can have engagement. The other thing I think I'm hearing is that now's the time to plan for the future. Our COVID world is not going to last forever. People are going to ultimately be able to come back together. And the things that you do now over the next 6 months to 9 months to 12 months can have a very significant impact on how your winery and how your engagement activities really come to play, correct?
100% right. Do the work while you can, which is now, because you don't want to forget this when you go out into the world. And frankly, it's going to give you a competitive business advantage by being empathetic and caring and thinking about things in a different way. Because I can guarantee you most wineries aren't thinking that way. But the ones that do are the ones that have incredible loyalty. The ones that do are the ones that have a foundation for building on. And the ones that do are attracting people that they want to attract. And that is, in the end, the most important thing. And not being so worried about sales is going to get you more sales.
So this is not just a generational type of situation. It doesn't matter whether it's baby boomer or Y or Generation X, millennial, you know, these are principles that carry forward across all sectors and truly relating to people on a human basis, how people would like to be treated. And they open up when you really just appeal to them on that nature, right?
Absolutely. You're a guy from the Midwest. I feel like this is a real value probably that you learned as a child, right? Is that everyone matters. Yes. Everyone that comes to you matters. They might not all be for you. That's okay. But yes, don't judge people by where they are in their demographics. And gosh, if they're interested and they don't know anything, seize that moment. You could change someone's life. You could make them so excited about wine. You could bring some joy into someone's life. It doesn't matter how old they are. So yes, we need to go beyond demographics. They don't work. It's not blanket, easy way out. So yeah, I'm not a big fan of demographics. The reason that I know this is because the people that listen to my podcast are all over the map in terms of age. Even though it's a podcast and it's new technology and people buying the book, I've got people who are 70 and 80 buying my book and asking me, can I have 10 signed book plates because I'm giving it to all my friends who finally have something that we can relate to in wine. They're 70 and they're 20 or 25, I should say. 20 is not legal. Yeah.
Well, I loved our opportunity to catch up here. For any of our listeners that want to follow you, where do they go to be able to plug into your podcast? And I want to give a plug for your book too, because I don't want that to be lost. I have read it and it helped me tremendously.
The podcast is available anywhere you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, anywhere, plus Outcast, Pocket Cast, anywhere. And it's Wine for Normal People. That's the podcast. And then the book is available on all major booksellers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all your indie bookshops. Of course, you know, I'm all about the small and medium-sized businesses. So I'm always saying, you know, ask your small shop to bring it in. And my website's wineformalpeople.com. I can hook your bookstore up with the publisher if need be. It's a Chronicle book.
I really appreciate you spending some time with us, Elizabeth. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.